Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Hiroko Shimbo, who is a Japanese cooking instructor, consulting chef to diverse food service industries, and cookbook author based in New York. As you may know, it's not easy to find a great Japanese cooking instructor in New York City, and Hiroko is one of the most trusted. Today we'll discuss the core principles of Japanese cuisine, Hiroko's unique culinary tours to Japan that you can participate, and much, much more. Hello, Hiroko. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Akiko, and I am very happy to be here.
Yeah, me too. So first of all, where are you from in Japan?
I am from Tokyo.
Okay. And how did you grow up? Were you always interested in cooking and food?
Yes, very much. I watched my mother cooking all day long, breakfast, lunch, dinner, 365 days. Well, my father was a doctor, a surgeon, and we lived in a clinic attached house.
Oh, wow.
So ground floor is my father's office and the patient quarters. And the second floor is our residence. And the kitchen was big. And my father did surgery. Maybe many of the 80% of the surgery is removing appendix, which is very popular in Japan.
Right.
And the patient stayed with us after the surgery at least for 1 week. So what my mother had to do was to feed them.
Wow, and that's amazing.
Yeah, so she was cooking every day about 15 people kind of meal. Half of them is for the patients, and half of them are for us, the family. And whenever I come back from the school, I head to the kitchen and always find her just cooking.
Wow. So I'm sure it's very, digestive and healthy cooking that she had to make for you. For your father's patients, right?
Oh, yeah, yes, very healthy, which means sometimes no salt, no fat, just the breast of chicken or white fish. So it is not so tasty. But my mother, she's now 89 years old. She's still a very good cook. And I was very lucky to be brought up with my mother, who is a wonderful cook.
Wow. Now I hope you don't have to eat something no salt, no fat food.
No.
Right. Okay. And then she cooked all Japanese food?
Yes, she did. She cooked, maybe she has a very interesting history, background. She cooked Japanese food along with quite many Westernized dishes. And my mother was born in 1927. And my mother's grandfather, he was a doctor, and he loved Western meals prepared by my grandma, her mother. And just a background at that time was the beginning of 20th century. And after the Meiji Restoration, Western ingredients, Western preparation techniques flooded to Japan.
Mm.
So we created a kind of strange Japanized Western dishes,
mm-hmm.
Such as we call yoshoku,
right.
Which includes Japanese-style steak, hamburger, rolled cabbage, curry, and rice, tonkatsu,
right.
Pork cutlet, these kind of things. So my this is how my grandma learned how to cook Western dishes. My grandpa was appointed as a nursery school doctor in the city, which is Niigata, the north west of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
It is on the Japan Sea.
Right.
This gave my grandma an opportunity to go to the church and then do volunteer.
Mm.
And sometimes she came back with a recipe, which was given by a wife of minister.
Okay.
So she started to cook chicken soup, French omelet, some deep fried chicken, stews using tongue, beef tongue.
Mm.
So she was brought up with this kind of food.
Right, at that time it was very trendy.
Very trendy food. Yes, very strange. So she cooked that kind of food.
Mm.
And the interesting thing is when I think this, she not just came back with recipe to her old Japanese home. She came back with Western thinking.
Huh.
A kind of... back then, the society was deep in the feudalistic society.
Right, from the samurai to
samurai emperor. That's right. And women was technically a slave or a second citizen.
Right.
So my grandma came back with an idea of what's the role of women in society. And how to treat women in society.
Mm.
So she planted that seed in my mother. So my mother was always telling us, you are girls, but if you study, have some dream, you can make something meaningful or something big.
Mm.
So that's why I am here doing what I am doing.
Right. So we're going to talk about everything about you, but here you go, like a New York lady. Here you go. Strong, independent person. congratulations. It worked out.
Yes. Took 2-3 generations.
Mm-hmm. Well, they must be really proud of you. So that's great.
No.
Right. And but how did you get into cooking? Like, you know, did you go to culinary school?
The answer is yes or no. I took just 1 year, 1.5 year cooking school class, which was offered not to the just professional cooks, but this time, women went to cooking school to learn something. To become a good wife.
Mm.
So I took that kind of course. But after graduating from university, my major was psychology and English.
Wow.
No, teaching.
Mm, okay.
And I found a job, secretary, a job at a small branch office of American security company,
Fidelity,
in Tokyo, Fidelity Management and Research Company.
Mm.
I worked for 4.5 years, and which means I reached to over beyond 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, if you don't marry, you are called Christmas cake. Because Christmas cake has no value.
Right, so after 25th of December, nobody's going to buy you, right?
Yeah, and the women, after 25 years old, nobody buys. So I quit the company because people are talking about every day.
Yeah, she's like, left over Christmas cake.
Right. Then I just, I didn't do much anything for about 8 months. Looking for something to do, meaningful. And one day, a couple of American flu blight researchers visited my father, and my mother entertained them with delicious meals. Mm. So they came back many more times with more fruits. And I was always helping her in the kitchen and just sitting at the table with them. And they saw me that I am not doing anything. So I asked me, why don't you teach Japanese language? So I went to this school and got the diploma. And I started to teach Japanese language, working for one language service company.
That makes sense because your degree is part education. So
Yes. So I enjoyed. Then teaching Japanese language is very interesting. It is not just teaching how to speak or how to say one phrase. The language is surrounded by, built up, up on the pillars of Japanese history, culture, food. You have to explain everything. And because people live and work in Japan, in Tokyo, so lots of questions about food came up.
Right.
And I went to such and such restaurant last night, and I had wonderful meals. How can I make this? So, and then, yeah, I was asked to teach Japanese cooking in addition to the to teaching the languages.
So it's like organic development to teach both.
Yes. Right. So a kind of that kind of, not through main road, but a kind of country road came to the teach Japanese cooking.
Right. So, but then eventually you came to the States, right? So
yes.
In 1999?
1999,
right.
Yes.
So what happened?
So, I should come here by myself. I luckily found American came to Tokyo as a businessman. And we dated for a couple of years, and we married. And that actually, yes, brought me to New York City. And he is from Philadelphia. And his when he was at the high school, everyone, his friends, dreamed to move to New York City. Someday, when I become successful as a businessman.
Okay.
So he had the same idea. And by that time, I think my teaching was pretty established. And I came to, I flew to New York City and taught 1 week Japanese cooking class course at Pita Camps.
Okay.
That's many years ago.
Right. It's now an international culinary center.
Culinary education.
Education, I'm sorry. Yeah. So how?
And I was writing a book and almost completed, and I was looking for the publisher to publish the book in America. So it was just timely to move to New York City.
Interesting. Everything seems to be led by something, some luck for you.
Maybe. I was lucky, but I just to make something happen, you always have to work hard. toward something which you don't know what's happening.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Like, what are you working hard? You don't know where you get to.
Right.
But
right.
Suddenly, like, oh, wow.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
Right.
That's true. And
yeah.
I am sure, Akiko-san, you have such that kind of moment.
Right, crazy turns of life. Like,
right.
Oh, reflection. Oh, that's a reason
right.
for that. I was suffering from it.
That's right.
Right. Okay. And so I will talk about your book later, but you published some books.
Yes.
And then, so you started teaching here.
Yes. So, yes, I started teaching at the Peter Camps, and then Peter Camps became International Culinary Education.
Mm.
So I was teaching Japanese cooking some Thai and Vietnamese cooking.
Mm. Right. And then, so you've been keep cooking for now, New York City, for 17 years, right? So what else do you teach? I mean, other than...
I teach at ICC, International Culinary Center, which was previously FCI,
French
Culinary Institute.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing. So what kind of classes do you offer?
I do a couple of, just 1 week long, we call it Essentials of Japanese Cooking, and just a one-day class of sushi and ramen.
Mm. Okay.
So I am not teaching all of the months or...
Right, but more intense...
Yes.
Intensive course in
yes.
a way. Right, so it sounds like you used to teach more home cooking for, you know, when you're in Japan, and now it's more kind of professional cooking.
Yes, and it is my approach to how I teach Japanese cooking. Maybe this can be applied to vocational students or vocational students, both. To my mission has been demystifying Japanese food.
Like your show.
Right? Yes, so I am very happy to be here today.
Yeah, you're the right person to be.
So how to demystify? There are three things which make Americans feel, Japanese cooking is just too hard to do in my kitchen. First, ingredients.
Mm.
Second, preparation techniques. And third, some specific cooking utensils, such as rice cooker.
Right.
American kitchen is completely differently set to Japanese
right.
kitchen.
Actually, my mother never had oven until recently.
Oh, wow.
So.
And actually, Doyle didn't, don't need
exactly.
any, yeah, oven. And my mother has an oven. She uses as a storage space.
She does that way, she had a long time.
right. So how to demystify these three areas? The ingredients, when it comes to just the key flavoring ingredients, shoyu, soy sauce, miso, rice vinegar, mirin, sake, they are pretty easily available at the large supermarkets or e-commerce, online places have all of these ingredients,
right.
So very easy to get.
Mm. And it used to be more difficult. You have to go to Japanese grocery stores.
That's right.
But it's now Whole Foods to regular supermarket, to, of course, Amazon.com,
yes.
everywhere.
Yes. And what makes them difficult to buy, even when they go to the store or online, there are choices.
Right.
Some soy sauce comes with a red cap or a yellow cap or a golden cap or some miso, some different flavors.
And
some
colors,
is
too.
Yeah, colors, too. Color is different. Some is salty. Some is milder. So I teach them... Not just this is soy sauce or miso, just gives all information about how they are made, what kind of ingredients are used, or some if there is any chemicals involved. Of course, I explain it. And how much fermentation period, what makes the color of red miso darker compared to young aged miso. Well, it is like cheese. So just breaking down things easy to understand, and then just to take away of a kind of fear against the Japanese ingredients.
Right. Uncertainty and fear.
Right.
So, okay. And but then a technique-wise you teach. So
yes.
That's the problem solved.
Right. And there's also techniques. Japanese uses certain techniques. For example, before we simmer fish and flavor with shoyu or mirin. American cooking that doesn't do kind of dish preparation, but they poach fish.
Right.
So in Japanese way, when we simmer fish, we always clean it beforehand. And how to clean it? Whole fish or just cut a piece of fish, put them in boiling water, just 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, which removes all of the surface yaki or off flavor, and then ready to be put into the pot with the new water to cook. So this technique can be applied to poaching, when Americans do poaching fish. So that kind of detailed information, and because I give lots of information, so it is not just for this recipe. With the acquired knowledge, when they go back to their kitchen, they can make, reproduce the dish. At the same time, they can apply their knowledge to other preparation.
Right.
So
you don't teach recipes, but you teach skills.
Right.
Okay.
And then also a kind of the philosophy of Japanese cooking. So that's my approach.
Right. So what is your mission? Like, you know, in the first place, teaching Japanese cuisine to people, non-Japanese people.
My mission is to demystify Japanese cuisine. And I still believe that Japanese meal is nutritionally balanced. Portion size is balanced. And one of the most healthy preparations.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's just so, yeah, okay. And I, you know, I think there's something important. You know, there's Japanese cuisine philosophy always, right? The core principles, which doesn't exist in American cuisine.
Right.
So maybe we can talk about that, because I want to learn.
Okay. So this is a part of the philosophy which I teach is called Gogyo, which is translated into five elements. Well, this philosophy actually came from China. So the universe is controlled by five elements, five forces. The five, one is tree, fire, soil, metal, water. So they interact each other, help each other to maintain balance of the world. Like tree burns, fire burns tree and make the soil, and the soil produce metal, and the metal bear dew. And if the water is, if there is too much water, soil absorbs water, but if water exceeds, you have flooding. And the fire and water can extinguish fire, but if fire is larger than water, and the fire destroys everything.
Mm.
So to have a balance with these elements is very important.
Mm.
And this is tied, five elements are tied to flavor, taste, and the preparation techniques.
Mm.
So the flavor. Green is, tree is green, fire red, soil orange, metal white, and water is black.
Mm.
So the chefs in Japan, when they plan a menu or meal, they try to incorporate these different colors.
Mm. Right. So that's people say goshoku.
Yes,
right.
Goshoku.
Right.
Yes.
Ah.
And when you think of vegetables, different color veggies have its own nutritional value.
Mm.
So incorporating different color vegetables is also very important. And this is from this goshoku, five color.
Right.
Then these are tied to flavor. The tree, sour, fire, bitter, orange, the soil, sweet, metal, hot, because it came from China.
Uh-huh.
Well, Japanese cooking doesn't use much hot spices, but metal, hot, and water, salty. And when you eat maybe more formal kaiseki kind of meal, the flavor is very a kind of a monotonous, or nothing is hot, nothing is spicy, nothing is sweet, nothing is overwhelming, or just the way how we prepare that kind of dish meals is to preserve the natural flavor of each ingredients used in the preparation. So we, and this flavor should come from each ingredient.
So they coming together, integrated, and there's like a balanced flavor.
Right.
It may not be as exciting as like barbecue sauce or chili, like, you know, the kind of thing, but just the end. Like I heard, I think it was Mr. Chef Morimoto, he said in the States, you have to have a big impact for when he serves miso soup.
Yes.
Because people, unless you feel salt in the first sip, they don't drink anymore. But in Japan, if you go to a regular kaiseki place, at the end of the whole bowl, you have enough, sufficient amount of saltiness.
Yes, exactly, exactly. That's how we approach to salting dishes. But here, everyone expect punching flavor. When you go to the restaurant, if there is no punching flavor, they say, this is not good. But Japanese food is very different.
Mm.
And have to balance these flavors. And the bitter is one of the very important flavor.
Mm.
So that's about the flavor. And then these five elements are tied to preparation techniques.
Mm.
So tree simmering, fire, you can guess, grilling, soil raw salad or sashimi, and metal stir fry or deep fry, and water steaming.
Right.
So when you adapt these five different techniques to make one meal, or maybe even four, you can prepare a meal which is nutritionally satisfactory, and it is also mentally, physically just nurturing.
Right. And visually beautiful, too.
And visually
appetizing.
Beautiful. Yes.
Right. And that, I think, because Japanese cuisine is based on seasonality, you know, the color comes from the nature, naturally.
Yes.
Variation.
Yes, so, that's true. And to preserve that color, texture, that's kind That's another very important thing.
Mm. So it sounds like you inherited your mother's cooking for your father's patience too, in a way.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. And but what's the biggest challenge in teaching Japanese cuisine for non-Japanese people, considering I have to explain all those things? And
yeah, the challenge when I started to teach Japanese cooking, I had a challenge because they asked so many questions about just the individual ingredients. Mm. How to make sake? How to make shoyu? How to make miso? So I this was one of my became my book, first book. I didn't know the answer, so I wrote a letter to small breweries, mm-hmm. small manufacturers, and then asked if I can come and just watch, or I want to learn mm-hmm. how this is shoyu is made, how sake is made. And Japan is a corporate society, mm-hmm. and I was always asked, which company are you working for? Well, I am an individual. And some of the place said, no, we are not interested in having you, kind of. Mm. But some of the places, they just took me and told me. I just continued to commute these different factories for about 4 years.
Wow.
And then that became a book, part of the book. So the challenge was just explaining everything about Japanese food.
Right. Because each, like soy sauce, miso, there's another, by itself, it can be a 1 hour lecture.
Yes.
Right? So,
yes.
Right.
It's
exactly. Very important. Right.
And then now, I don't know. Well, so today, the challenge is Japanese food is a meal is eaten with chopsticks. Mm. So everything is cut into small pieces before cooking.
Right.
So
that you can pick up with chopsticks.
Exactly. So knife skill is very important.
Mm.
But usually just home cooks, they struggle to cut veggies as I asked to do. So knife skill is one of the most challenging thing.
And that's that reminded me, a kaiseki chef told me one time, and he said, you have to really think of the size of someone's, a diner's mouth. Because if you cut too uh-huh. small or too big,
yes.
you don't enjoy the food enough, that's, like 100%.
Yes, that's exactly true.
Right, so and it's kind of a omotenashi, hospitality-minded.
Yes, it is.
Thinking
it is.
Too.
And then depending on how large to cut, just the cooking time differs. So if someone cut some veggies too large, and then when I say in my recipe, cook 5 minutes or 2 minutes, just say it doesn't apply to this huge cut of veggies.
Right.
So...
Right.
So that's another challenge. Yeah, that's a challenge.
Right. But I'm sure people learn. That's the whole point of going to your class. Oh, that's amazing. All right. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about Hiroko's unique culinary tour to Japan. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events, such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Hiroko Shimbo, who is a chef instructor, a consulting chef to diverse food service industries, and cookbook author based in the U.S. since 1999. So we've been talking about teaching, and the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America, just started a professional Japanese course called Japanese Advanced Cooking in September for junior students. So what do you think about it?
I think that's fantastic, and should have happened much much earlier.
I agree.
Because there is no professional cooking school. Well, on the West Coast, Chef Matsuda, he has been running some sushi school, kind of, but there is no kind of established Japanese cooking school in America. And it was in the CIA campus. Mm. And it's just a wonderful experience for the any chefs who wants to be a Japanese chef or who can be very much inspired by Japanese cooking when they cook American, European, or other cuisine. So I think it is wonderful.
Right. Yeah, and I got some details, and it's from here, from the September to December, and 11 classes, and starting from dashi, then rice, and nabemono, which is a pot dish, and sushi, agemono, fried food, noodles, which is soba, udon, somen, and kaiseki, hors d'oeuvres, and kaiseki grilled dishes, desserts, and bento box, and the kaiseki course dinner menu. So it sounds very intense.
Wow, yes, very intense. So this is 11 week, all day?
Right, and I think they have a field trip, meaning visiting Japanese restaurants in the city.
Okay, wow. Right.
No, but it's like from now to through December. So this is really the most comprehensive Japanese course I've ever heard.
Yes, that's and who are teaching this?
Mr. Murashima, who is who's been an instructor at the Tsuji Culinary School.
Okay.
The Tsuji Culinary Institute in Japan, which is equivalent of CIA in Japan.
That's right.
By the best culinary school, and I think Mr. Murashima was the opening chef at the Brushstroke in Tribeca.
Oh,
and
okay.
He went back after it took off, and he came back. He was invited back to teach us.
Wow.
Right. So sounds like it's very serious.
Yeah. Yes. Right. And wow, what wonderful. And why to junior but not senior?
Well, I think, I think this is experimental first time. So it's freshman or sophomore, and then the third year, let's try.
Okay, so and I know that the CIA, they teach Asian cooking,
right.
And the Japan was part of the Asian cooking one week.
Right.
So this is a kind of extended.
I think so, more focused program.
Okay.
Right. So I think this may expand the pie of Japanese cuisine, hopefully, in this whole country.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So, And I really want to talk about one of your Japanese cookbooks, because you have three, and most recent ones, Hiroko's American Kitchen, Cooking with Japanese Flavors. And I found it interesting because each chapter is named for Japanese taco sauce that you can apply easily to Western-style dishes. Right, so could you tell us about the book?
Okay, and here for you.
Oh, thank you.
So
now I would have to cook.
That, right. Do you cook?
I try, but I feel like I don't know anything about it.
Try doesn't sound like you are cooking.
Okay, thank you.
So Hiroko's American Kitchen came out of a kind of necessity or need to simplify my cooking in my kitchen. I love to cook, and I have to cook, because if you don't cook, when you go to this restaurant, you don't know what's in there.
Right.
And I just my mother's influence is too strong, and if you cook, that's the most healthy, good food at home. So, but when I have lots of things to do, and I don't want to spend more than half an hour in the kitchen.
Like everybody else, right?
Right. Then I thought, okay, so I will make some system. And I prepped basic stocks, which is dashi and the kelp stock. One is a vegetable stock, and four sauces. And I made a large batch, stored in the freezer and the refrigerator, and used as a kind of their mother stock and the sauce.
Right.
So, for example, if I want to make soba, I just pull one sauce and just dilute with water.
Right.
And then you have a wonderful tasting noodle soup broth. So that kind of sauces. And when you go to the store, Japanese food store, you can already find these already made sauces and things. But I am very, I don't know, purist, or I don't like any preservatives. I don't like any chemical ingredients.
Yes, and it's too salty often in the case.
Yes.
And then you can taste actually chemicals like MSG, which is not as friendly.
No, it is not.
To your body and other ingredients too.
Yeah. Right. And these days, more people, or especially millennials, they are looking for more clean, natural, healthy foods.
Right.
And how you can have that kind of food is, you have to sacrifice. You have to cook by yourself, but make it easy, quick and easy.
Right.
So that's the purpose of my book.
Well, quick and easy, and it's really real.
Yeah.
Right? Like professional chefs. So,
right.
So the listeners, again, it's Hiroko's American Kitchen. It's available on Amazon and a lot of other bookstores.
And the holiday season is coming, so please.
Yes, Hiroko's American Kitchen. It's really pretty, and it's highly easily you can apply it to anything, to Western cooking.
And actually, this book won Best American Cookbooks Award.
Wow.
In 2013.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Right. So, okay, well, thank you for the book. I'll cook, I yeah. promise.
Yes, I will check in too.
Thank you. I clean up you. Right. And the other thing I really want to mention, so I heard that you organize tours to Japan for foodies, and there's one coming up to Hokkaido?
Yes.
Right. So maybe you can tell us about the tour.
Okay. So as part of my culinary career, well, I like to do lots of different things. And I, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I organized one trip to Japan, I took the group to, it is a very small group, usually about 10 people, to Tokyo, Kyoto, 1,000 years of capital of Japan, and Kanazawa, the second Kyoto, which is called second Kyoto, and actually I was born there. And Takayama, culture spot in the mountain, and Gokayama, that's a UNESCO nature heritage site. And the people loved the experience, different, and lots of activities in Tokyo. This is not much available now. Took the group to Tsukiji early in the morning. We saw
the auction, tuna auction.
Tuna auction. And I had I have a friend in the market.
Wow.
So he took us to the middleman's stand and showed us how to fillet the fish, tuna, which they bought at the auction. And we did the cooking class. We took cooking class, and we went every place where we must go when we are in Tokyo for 3 days.
I mean, you must go. You're talking about for foodies. So what do you eat?
Foodies plus with culture, not just the food culture, history.
Okay.
And we ate all sort of things. Then moved to Kyoto, and Kyoto, we visited the sake brewery.
Okay.
And we visited many temples and the shrines.
Right.
And did the meditation at the Zen temple, ate vegetarian lunch at the Zen temple. So this kind of exposing them to whole Japanese culture.
So you can kind of be immersed into the deeper part of the culture.
Yes.
Right. So the one you're going is Hokkaido, which is the northern big island of Japan.
Yes. And the people who joined my previous tour kept asking me, please organize a tour to Hokkaido. I went to Hokkaido when I was at the couple of times for skiing, but I didn't know much about Hokkaido. So I thought, okay, I want to discover Hokkaido. So last year, I took my husband and went to did the all research. Which hotel do we stay? What kind of activities do I offer? Where is the best place?
And Hokkaido is really interesting that I actually, personally, I haven't been there, but I keep hearing, so maybe I should go. But for instance, kombu, 95% of kombu comes from Hokkaido.
Yes, that's correct.
Right,
that's
and dairy, people used to call Hokkaido as gaichi, means foreign land. So
right.
They have completely different climate.
And yes, climate, history, culture. And Hokkaido is like America. Japanese invaded Hokkaido and subjugated Ainu people by the that completed by the Meiji, beginning of Meiji. So industry is very new and vast land, farmland, and they have wonderful cattle, dairy, farmers, farms, and the seafood is the best.
I'm getting hungry just by thinking about it. Right. So where can we find the information of your tour?
So the information you can find at my website, www.hirokoskitchen.com. And also if you are interested in receiving complete information, including the tour fee. This is open to just 9 people.
Wow, very exclusive.
Yeah, very exclusive. The reason is we go to one national park in Shiretoko, one of the peninsula, where we will take a guided tour. the area has the largest brown bear habitat.
Okay.
So,
wow.
So on the guide can take only 10 people.
Mm.
So including me, only 9 can go.
Right. Wow. So sounds very special.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So listeners, it's if you're interested, it's Hiroko's Kitchen. When are you going?
In May 25th through June 6th.
Okay.
Next year.
Sounds exciting. So
yes,
check that out.
Please
okay.
Come along with me.
Sure, right. So listeners, again, it's hirokoskitchen.com. It's H-I-R-O-K-O-S kitchen.com. All right. So thank you so much for joining us today, Hiroko.
Thank you very much, Akiko-san. Thank you.
So please come back.
Thank you.
So listeners, again, if you'd like to know more about Hiroko's activities, please visit hirokoskitchen.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at Japanese@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japanese Live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes and Stitcher podcasts. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And today's show was made possible by Corin, and our engineer is David Tatasiore. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.